Okay, welcome back everyone for our last session of today on the documentary reel. Unfortunately, there has been a change in the program. Johan Grimonpre could not make it here today due to family reasons. So we have to reshuffle the program a bit, but Sis Bierings did make it here, and he's so kind to bring us a kind of backup program. So it's kind of a surprise act, let's say, but that's for later. So let's start straight away. First, we have two very distinguished speakers. Our first speaker is Stella Bruzzi. She is professor of film and television studies at the University of Warwick in the UK. She's also currently the chair of the faculty. Her publications include many articles and books, to name just a few: Undressing Cinema, Clothing and Identity in the Movies, published in 1997. New Documentary, which is quite famous. It became a standard work for scholars in film theory, and the second edition appeared in 2006. Bringing Up Daddy, Fatherhood and Masculinity in the Postwar Hollywood. It appeared in 2005. And then there is this book in 2007, a book on the seminal British television series 7-Up. And she's currently writing a second major documentary book, provisionally titled Approximation, hence the title of a presentation, Approximation, Documentary History and Staging Reality. Please welcome Stella Bruzzi.
Thank you. This is a slightly different paper, perhaps, from some of the others that we've had. When Rob contacted me, asking me to present at this conference, as a means of starting the research that he's just mentioned, what I decided to do was to examine the notion of the documentary reel by looking at the collision, as it were, between two extremes, not the blurred boundary in the middle, which is what a lot of the book, I'm sure, will be about, but the ostensibly diametrically opposed polarities. And so what I've chosen to do is to look at top-end television fiction on the one hand and breaking news on the other. So although I'm going to introduce the larger work in which this very particular bit is going to be couched, what I'm going to be talking about primarily is the use in the American television series Mad Men of the death of JFK on the 22nd of November 1963. For those of you who don't know Mad Men, I will introduce it briefly as well as show a clip. The added complexity is that my computer appears to be running out of power, but I'm sure we'll get to the end. This paper forms part of a larger project, as Rob has just indicated, featuring a variety of ways in which the arts, that's film, television, the internet, music, opera, contemporary video art, for example, incorporate, cite, and recontextualize documentary and factual footage. The examples of approximation I am writing about, and I'll go into what I mean by that term more fully in a moment, range from the creative use of factual documentary footage in the arts, several of which we've seen in terms of the visual arts, but also opera, music and painting, for example, through the contemporary documentary form, the instantaneous accumulation and transmission of alternative multiple capturings of events, an obvious example being, for example, the attack on the Twin Towers on 9/11, in kind of internet archives, whether we want to call them archives or not. There are also, for example, performative impersonations, one or two I'll show you, the recreation and dramatization of politically significant trials, for example, as a means of replicating the truth, as well as the much more obvious dramatization of real events in films and dramas. For example, in the chapter that we'll be comparing and contrasting different representations of the same figure or event, for example, Tony Blair, the intention will be to set the real Blair alongside the the dramatised Blair in more authentic drama documentaries, such as The Deal and The Queen, here impersonated by Michael Sheen, alongside much looser, more tangential representations of Blair in films such as Roman Polanski's The Ghost. Now, a film such as The Ghost raises other issues, because obviously Polanski, making the film at the time when he did, fearing his extradition order, he couldn't film in the US. There's a whole load of other layers, if you like, that I would like to add to that, to a discussion such as that one. What interests me isn't, therefore, just difference, but how knowledge of the real, always in inverted commas, I suppose, Blair informs our responses to the least authentic renditions of him. Approximation is about layering, about arriving at an understanding and an interpretation of an event, a figure, via comparative analysis of images generated in a variety of ways. The particular example that I'll focus on in this paper is the series Mad Men, the brilliant multiple award-winning US series created by Matthew Weiner, currently in the UK in its fourth series, which has already aired in the US. For those of you who don't know Mad Men, and it is in my opinion brilliant. It's set in an advertising agency on New York's Madison Avenue. The first series started right at the end of the 1950s, and series four has reached so far 1964. Between each series, roughly a year elapses, and each set of 13 episodes travels through a relatively concentrated period of time. Why the use of time in Mad Men is important is that the series, though fictional, is from the start acutely conscious of its historical context. The fictional characters within it live their lives against and respond to the real events that have shaped American political history. What interests me specifically in this discussion are the casual interjections of historical events into narratives that are otherwise entirely fictitious, a juxtaposition that Mad Men has always relished as it maps itself against not just the fashions, styles, and social politics of the time, but also momentous contemporary political events, from the Nixon-Kennedy election campaign of 1960, through to the Cuban Missile Crisis, the murder of Medgar Evers, and, which will be the focus in a moment, the assassination of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. The wider project into which this consideration of Mad Men falls is intended to be a response to our current preoccupation, as we've heard already today, with the diversification of ways in which the media and related cultural forms represent, use, and manipulate real events, especially against the backdrop of recent important technological advances. In this, the second decade of the 21st century, we are witnessing a particularly significant convergence of momentous historical events and huge changes to our audiovisual media. And inevitable consequence of which is a global reassessment of how images are compiled, constructed, valued, and received. Within this overarching framework, my attention will remain on factual and historical representation, and more specifically, what happens to the integrity of the original facts, documents, and documentaries at a time when the use of these fact-related forms by other media is altering our understanding of them completely. With the proliferation of, for example, DVD and the arrival of new primarily internet-based viewing and distributing platforms, recognised discrete categories such as documentary, dramatisation and fiction are being quite fundamentally and radically reassessed. In 1999, James Moran pondered the problem documentary theory faced, potentially, from the digital code circumvention of analogue recording. Belief in the indexical properties of the factual analogue image has since been questioned, for example, by myself in the book New Documentary. But the impact of The digital on how we interpret the authenticity of the factual image is only now being fully realised. In the digital age, documents are available to be reworked, not just by filmmakers, but also, just as importantly, I think, by us viewers. A vital component of this engagement is, obviously, the internet. What, for example, are the implications of British documentary filmmaker Adam Curtis eschewing broadcast television, for example, in favour of his blog on the BBC website to show his most recent full documentary, It Felt Like a Kiss? Or, for example, for those of you who experienced the election in the UK recently, there were, for example, the kind of fictional election briefings which The Guardian Online ran of the character Malcolm Tucker, who features in the film In the Loop and in the series The Thick of It, being used on The Guardian website almost as if they were real interventions into the election campaign. What's occurring, it seems to me, is an excitable flirtation with how to show and perform facts and evidence, with mixing genres, switching cultural arenas, the collective effect of which I want to explore through the concept of approximation, a term used in this context to signal works whose aim is to approximate reality rather than more straightforwardly represent it, which was my focus when I was writing specifically about documentary. Although the documents and facts on which approximate texts are based remain preeminent, it is the detachment between the two that will remain my focus, as the various texts I want to examine largely occupy that area of representation that both transcribes information and factual events and transgresses the sometimes crudely delineated boundaries between fact and fiction. This research, therefore, is driven by the resulting dynamic relationship between raw documentary data, documents, archive, news, for example, and their reuse and their repackaging in other frequently fictional contexts. What approximation offers is the mise-en-scène or staging of fact and history. A real person is inserted into a narrative, not in order to be collapsed into fiction, but to coexist in collision with it. A point of departure for this conceptualization of approximation as a space of fantasy and desire is Elizabeth Cowie's essay, Fantasia, from 1984, in which she argues, in relation, I have to say, to psychoanalytic writing and Hollywood film, that, and I quote Cowie here, the opposition real/not real is wholly inappropriate to a consideration of fantasy, and that fantasy, usually characterised as a series of wishes presented through imaginary happenings, is also a structure. Fantasy is the mise-en-scène of desire, the putting into a scene, a staging of desire. In a comparable way, approximations are stagings of evidence and fact, re-enactments of the pooled resources of filmmakers, spectators, historians, and other collators of evidence. This will be another instance when contemporary notions of the performative, that identity is constructed and a process of negotiation with the social world, as proposed, for example, by Judith Butler in Gender Trouble in 1990, is found within documentary and documentary-related work. An idea that I pursued in New Documentary and which is now ripe for much more detailed development. Approximations are propelled, I'd argue, by the frisson of recognition, of knowing a film or drama's point of reference, but also being able to recognise that the reconstruction and the point of reference are not equivalents. It's into this gap that we insert our desires, convictions, and opinions. I characterise approximation as a contemporary phenomenon, although the broader research project takes as its starting point the impact on representation as well as on global politics of the terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center on the 11th of of September 2001. Approximation isn't simply about 9/11. Although these attacks offer a compelling example of how technology and events have conspired to make us reassess, quite simply, our ways of looking and seeing. Any such iconic event, the liberation of Bergen-Belsen, for instance, or the assassination of President Kennedy, has in part come to be understood via the images and sounds, hence the beginning of Michael Moore's film on the subject, that exist of it and the many far more elliptical allusions to it. In terms, for example, of 9/11, there, one could cite James Marsh's documentary feature Man on Wire, which can only really be understood, although it's not about 9/11, in direct relation to and as an indirect recognition of those attacks. Or the title sequence of Mad Men. I'm sorry, I don't know quite why there's the little man and the big man. That was my mistake. In which the monochrome man falling in front of a New York skyscraper can function semiotically as a visual metaphor for the main character in the series, Don Draper, who is very enigmatic, very opaque, but also inevitably recalls the falling man who propelled himself from one of the burning towers. As Janet Walker argues, real catastrophes can disturb memory processing. Each iconic event throws into turmoil previous critical definitions of both representational forms and also reality. There are not many historical events more iconic, probably, particularly in the US, than the assassination of JFK. And now I will examine the insertion of this event into the penultimate episode of Series 3 of Mad Men. As the series audience realised that Mad Men wouldn't only chart the lives of its fictional Madison Avenue characters, but also map these onto American historical events, how the series would approach this traumatic, pivotal historical event became a topic for discussion in itself. Series 2 of the series had culminated with the Cuban Missile Crisis. Series 3 would inevitably reach November 1963. Well before Series 3 aired, the series creator, Matthew Weiner, remarked about the inevitability of reaching this iconic milestone. I can say one thing in advance. The Kennedy assassination is very well-trod territory, and I don't see myself adding to that, although he does. I discussed the assassination of JFK in New Documentary as one of the several iconic historical moments. By iconic, I meant traumatic events that had entered the collective memory and that possessed a specific amalgam of qualities, that they had been accidentally captured on camera and so preserved in the image as well as in the memory, and they remained unexplained. And I think the kind of accidental quality of what we know about the images that we have of the assassination, which I'll come on to in a moment, is absolutely fundamental to how one understands them. This dislocated relationship between seeing and explaining is fundamental to these events' iconic status. As Bill Nichols comments, to represent the event is clearly not to explain it. And it is this central inadequacy that has led to a peculiar canonization of certain emotionally charged pieces of film and video. The iconic images of the Kennedy assassination are, I would suggest, the grainy 8mm frames of Abraham Zapruder's home movie footage of that day. And I'm not going to run the whole film, which is, it'll completely detract from what I'm trying to say because it's so shocking. The images are, I would suggest, fixed in memory and in time, resonant with meaning, overly familiar fetish objects, even beautiful in their Kodak brightness. The pink of Jackie's suit against the lurid green behind the car. And I've purposefully found here versions of the film, apart from I've got one slightly better quality, that are still kind of, that are still grainy, that haven't been enhanced, apart from that one, which, although the it doesn't like being blown up as much as that, is a much brighter image. What's ironically crucial, however, to the impact of Mad Men's rendition of the 22nd of November 1963 is that whilst we, the people watching, have the Zapruder images in our minds when watching it, this is precisely the footage that was certainly not available to view at the time of the assassination, and indeed wasn't broadcast in its entirety for at least another decade. Abraham Zapruder's film has become the dominant assassination text, onto which is poured all the subsidiary grief, anger, belief in, you know, conspiracy theories, corruption surrounding the unresolved events that it depicts. The text is simple, but its meaning is not. As Barthes observed, myth is not defined by the object of its message, but by the way in which it utters this message. There are formal limits to myth. There are no substantial ones. End quote. Mad Men as a series is praised for its authentic, though arch, recreation via its costume and decor, which you'll see in a moment, of its early 1960s milieu. One thing it had to be was just as authentic, if you like, in its handling of the death of JFK. So the characters reconstruct the day's television viewing as the news breaks. They happen, for example, upon the first CBS bulletin that interrupts the soap opera as the world turns. And later the characters tune into the very moving Walter Cronkite's shocked announcement that the president has died with Cronkite fighting back tears. Now, before I go on, what I want to do is to play you off YouTube what you see in the background of the scene from the series that I'm just about to see. And this was the first moment this is the soap opera As the World Turns, which was interrupted with the first bulletin, and I'll just run it briefly.
He said something about not wanting her to have Thanksgiving dinner alone. He didn't think it was right.
It was real nice of the boy.
And I thought about it, and I gave it a great deal of thought, Grandpa.
What's very moving about it, and I'll show the drama in a minute, of the original night, it was daytime, obviously, when the news first broke, is that clearly, although we think of it as one of the events when kind of the world stops, you know, I mean, it's ironic, deeply ironic, that it interrupts a series called As the World Turns. But As the World Stops, it didn't stop immediately, and it went from that bulletin to that coffee advert, and there's more the soap opera and more ads. Watching it now, it seems, you know, obviously we kind of know where the story ended. At the time, people didn't know, and so it took a few hours for all of television to kind of stop. There weren't advert breaks played for several days until after the funeral, for example, on the television. So, back to Mad Men. Mad Men doesn't, in many ways, deviate from a certain rule of authentication. The characters only watch what they could have watched on that day, November the 22nd, and the subsequent days. I stress that for us, the later 21st century audience, what's emotionally important, however, is that we bring to our viewing of this sequence what has come out since. The capturing on film of Kennedy's violent death, for example, conspiracy theories, another example, that accompanied that particular film, and that day's effect on subsequent American history. Like Americans at the time, the Mad Men characters are glued to their television sets once the news has broken, watching events unfold, including 2 days later, the live on television murder of the supposed assassin Lee Harvey Oswald at the hands of Jack Ruby. And they go as far as Kennedy's funeral. The incidental nature of the treatment of Kennedy's death, however, is also significant. The audience, have been waiting for the assassination to happen. We have known for a while, for instance, that the daughter of one of the main characters, Roger Sterling, is due to get married on the 23rd of November, 1963. So we know that the series is going to get to, you know, after the death of JFK. But the characters have not been, you know, building up, obviously. We know they are going to live through the most momentous event of American 1960s history, but the characters are not weighed down with this particular significance. And what I'm going to do now is to play the clip from Series 3. Hang on, sorry. When the news first breaks.
Bob did.
Oh.
Well, I was hoping to catch you on your way to lunch.
Too late.
I found out yesterday that head of accounts is going...
Rare to see.
Oh, my God.
Is he dead?
Shh. Okay. I think you kind of get the idea of how it does it. You know, the way that the character... they watch things in sequence as they would have done at the time. And also, it starts with that very pathetic scene in which the character on the right of the screen, Pete, is moaning to his friend, telling his colleague how he didn't, in the previous scene, get the promotion that he'd hoped for. And in the background, I think it is the scene which I played, you know, is the sequence of from CBS that I played from YouTube, which those characters at that moment aren't actually noticing. The extreme bathos of this moment is tonally complex. We are gearing up for a tragedy, but not one dependent upon the usual identification with on-screen characters. I talked earlier of approximation as an excitable flirtation with how to show and perform facts and evidence, a desire to make us look differently at images and events that are often familiar by decontextualising the factual source material. The frisson created by the approximate moments in Mad Men, and they share this with other such approximation, and what makes them notably moving, I'd argue, seems to me to be generated by these being moments when the audience knows more than the characters do and when the characters are seen to be trying to catch up. The film theorist Steve Neal, using the Italian critical theorist Franco Moretti, discovered that the most affecting moments in Hollywood melodramas, the scenes that finally brought one to tears, were those when a character who had been ignorant of something finally reaches the same point of knowledge and awareness as another character. Comparably, the effect, the ability to move of the approximate moment, comes when fictional characters go some way towards reaching our point of knowledge and awareness about the factual events that are being restated. A hugely significant and moving factor in Mad Men is that the viewers have been anticipating the death of JFK. This gearing up to what we know is inevitable is part of the fantasy, the emotive restaging of what we already know and have assimilated. There is both comfort and shock in having the authentic, original moment relived as it is in Mad Men. It doesn't necessarily add to our understanding of the events of November the 22nd, 1963. Its power resides in its ability to emotively invoke events that have become ingrained in our shared consciousness. Built into this is the melodramatic imperative of repetition, of revisiting an event that has already been deeply affecting, so the effect is therefore multiplied. The The JFK episode raises key issues of approximation and of shared consciousness by drawing on not only the familiar news footage from that day, but also our shared consciousness of what was not instantly available, notably Abraham Zapruder's film, of the actual death. Coupled with the emotional intensity generated by the characters acquiring the same knowledge we bring to the approximate event, there is also the emotional intensity generated by knowing what, in terms of factual evidence, is being omitted. What is not there is just as important in terms of how we respond, I think, to this episode as what is there. And it's the difference, as I said right at the beginning, is the distance between the two, I think, which is the kind of key factor in making it emotionally affective. Observing the characters in Mad Men responding to the CBS bulletins and the other bulletins of the day is even more affecting because in our imaginations, their reactions trigger an imaginative recollection of all the information and the images that over time we have acquired, but they are still ignorant of. The characters passing through history is a valued feature of Mad Men, and in this instance, time is both frozen, petrified in that one iconic moment, but also still marching on as the characters continue into the future, past the moment the world stopped or the dream died. In this, Mad Men is both a plausibly sincere rendition of what the day was like for ordinary Americans and a postmodern site on which all the accumulated knowledge about that day is brought together. The characters necessarily display a certain innocence in their responses compared to our more cynical experience of the knowledge acquired since 1963. But just as it's impossible to return, I would argue, to William Blake's Songs of Innocence poems and read them as innocent after having read the twin volume Songs of Experience, so our cynicism stains the authentic spontaneity of this incident, of this incidental approximate moment in Mad Men. Mad Men is rooted in the collision between memory and authenticity. So we evaluate the series' dramatised mimesis of the events of that day via our own memories. And just to conclude, approximation is characterised by layering, by texts which tacitly assume layers of awareness that eventually lead us back to core iconic antecedents that perhaps no longer need to be named directly in order to be evoked. I started by suggesting that our attraction to these approximations is more prevalent now and linked to the multiplication of the ways in which images can be generated and consumed. The ways we look at reality are themselves changing just as rapidly as the world we actually live in. We are thus, in an example such as Mad Men, being offered new ways of looking at and conceptualizing the document, the factual image, which in turn is helping to shape the cultural landscape of the 21st century. Thank you.